listen to the best of the church's music for the Advent season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Advent season, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Abortion is not health care because health care is about healing people, not killing them.
Vice President Biden has a long history of supporting procured abortion. Therefore, he can't approach to receive the sacrament.
All of those old accounts of duties are thought to be repressed, and we must be liberated from them all. And so the needed distinctions between historical figures are all sort of washed away, and they're lumped together as simply guilty as charged.
He is coming again. It is going to happen. Every eye will see him. We can't wait for this moment to arrive. And yet, as we journey toward it, he constantly sustains us by coming to us.
Drivers for Uber and Lyft, listen to Issues Etc. Hey, green means go.
It's everywhere. We were just having a conversation around the office here earlier today. We were talking about school teachers. I said, well, if you were a math teacher, maybe you wouldn't have to put up with intersectionality or identity politics or what's called systemic racism or critical race theory. But someone was quick to point out that, you know, they know a math teacher, and a math teacher has told them that, well, in the word problems, it's all there. Critical race theory, identity politics, it finds its way into any subject. What about your local museum? What about the nation's museum, the Smithsonian? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon. It's the 17th of December. We're going to be talking with Joy Pullman about identity politics at the Smithsonian Museum. And then it's part eight of our series, Answering Arguments Against Christianity Today. The Bible isn't a reliable historical document. Dr. Adam Francisco will answer that argument. Joy Pullman joins us to talk about identity politics at the Smithsonian. She's managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book The Education Invasion, and a recent column titled Partitioning Smithsonian Museums by Race is Anti-American and Morally Evil. Joy, welcome back.
Hi there.
What addition is being proposed for the museums at Washington, D.C.'s Smithsonian?
Right now there are new museums proposed specifically to focus on American women as well as Latino Americans.
What is the ideology behind these proposals?
I mean, the idea is, one of the things that I write about in my piece is, look, Latino Americans are Americans. Women, female Americans are Americans, you know, so their history is American history. And so when we kind of divide into these subsets, what we're really saying is, first of all, women and Latinos are somehow separated or segregated, you know, kind of off in their own corner, which is simply not true. I mean, we're saying a lot of things, you know, and that's one of them. And other things we're saying about them is that kind of propagating the lie that American history doesn't already include figures that include, you know, some of these demographic characteristics. Another thing that it really does is focused on really what divides Americans as opposed to what unites us. And it also kind of gives, you know, kind of participation awards to people based on their sex and their race, as opposed to valuing people's contributions to the nation as a whole, regardless of what they look like, where they came from, you know, what their private parts are or their chromosomes are. So it's a very different view of looking at the world, and one I don't think that we should be enshrining in, you know, representative institutions like the Smithsonian.
You say that social justice warriors don't need any new museums because they already control nearly all the ones that currently exist. What do you mean by that?
I mean, I don't know about you, but I actually really, I love to go to museums. I haven't done much of that yet this year, but, and I used to live in the D.C. area, so, and wonderfully, the Smithsonians are free, you know, to cost the price of getting there. So I used to spend a lot of time in them. just kind of haunting them is a great weekend thing to do. And so, and I also, you know, I've had, you know, friends, colleagues reporting on kind of the different exhibits that have been occurring. So anyone who has as much familiarity with not only those specific museums, but just museums all across the country, you know, they're basically infected with the same thing that all of American academia is, which is this identity politics division of Americans among what I consider mostly trivial lines. And I say mostly because I do think, you know, that cultural heritage in the proper context and treatment, it does matter, right? You know, where we come from, culture, culture matters absolutely. And people have different cultures. That's a true thing and it deserves inspection. But that's not the way that really identity politics looks at Americans. It doesn't, you know, think about culture in a really round way and in a kind of a way that holds it up for fair criticism of both positive and negative aspects and really celebrating and inspecting what makes different groups of people different and why they behave that way. So the identity politics that we, you know, that I've seen for years, you know, in fact, going back many decades in the Smithsonian's and many other institutions, it's just the same garden variety identity politics, this really shallow view of people as boxing them into certain behavior or beliefs based solely on their genetics, which, I mean, I think is just flat out racist. It's also sexist, and it also is a really flat way of looking at the world. Our spirits, our achievements, our who we are as people, it is affected, you know, by our history and who we are biologically, but it is not determined by those specific realities. And the way that the identity politics people look at that is, I mean, it's honestly, I feel nowadays it's even more limiting and really stereotyped, you know, than even the old kind of 1950s views, you know, say of men and women that they try to criticize. I mean, they're just as bad, if not worse. You know, so if you go to those museums, you will see literally women highlighted just because they're women, not necessarily because of their high achievements. You know, you will see people of what politically favored, you know, the current, I mean, this division of people by their racial, this pigeonholing of people by their racial, you know, happenstance, I think is really dangerous. And you'll see people being pigeonholed as in kind of like filling the Latino slot, you know, which I consider extremely offensive. So that's really the way that it's treated rather than, I mean, there could be a positive way of looking at, oh, you know, I think of, you know, obviously I'm a woman, that affects who I am. It changes, you know, my biology absolutely affects my life, you know, but it's not a determinative thing. And it doesn't say that I have to think or behave in a certain way. And that sort of pigeonholing and stereotyping is a hallmark of this kind of identity politics that is just everywhere throughout all the cultural institutions, including the existing Smithsonian exhibits.
The context for this, you talk about the real institutional racism of using racial criteria for admission to scholarship programs, media positions, boards of companies, government contracts, special legal protection, college entrance. Tell us a little bit about that with about a minute.
All right. So we hear from the people who call themselves anti-racist, literally, that we should be creating kind of like these racial czars, making amendments to the U.S. Constitution that makes all of our laws, rather than race neutral, applied equally to all, regardless of who you are or what you look like. They want to make the law applied specially to people based on their race. Different standards for different people, which scares the heck out of me. And that's just flat out racism. So in the name of anti-racism, the new, you know, identity politics folks are really, you know, and they have been since the civil rights era, basically saying that there's politically favored racial groups, you know, and there's a politically favored sex, women, and they have been applying special privileges to those groups, you know, since a number of, and it's not only laws, but there are laws, but there's also, I mean, numerous regulations to this effect, where just the same standards that, you know, are applied to, you know, the disfavored group, which everyone knows is white males, they're not applied to everyone else equally. And that is a serious problem. You know, we cannot on the definition, you know, the face of it, we cannot have the equal application of the law to all people, regardless of what they look like or who they are. I mean, I consider that an American ideal. I don't just consider that. It's not just my opinion. It's baked into our founding documents. The creator has, you know, created all men equal, and they're endowed by their creator with inalienable rights. In America, we do not get rights because, you know, I don't know, we have a certain hair color, we have a certain, you know, shape of our chin, you know, we have, you know, I'm a woman versus being a man, or I engage in sexual behavior in a certain way. That is not American. So, I mean, we've seen, of course, everyone now is really familiar with the fact that this sort of kind of competing regime has cropped up in America, and it is a direct threat to our national creed that, you know, we applied through the Civil War and through the original civil rights movement. Of the promise of America was to make our ideals available to all people, regardless of what they look like, where they came from, how much money they have. And that's still the America that I believe in, and I consider that to be the real anti-racism. But the exact opposite today is now happening under that name, and it has effectively created many situations in boardrooms where literally they pick people because of the color of their skin. So we are endorsing racism nowadays, as opposed to picking people regardless of what they look like, based on their qualifications, based on what they can contribute to society. In America, we have these two kind of competing visions for what equality means, and I obviously very much stand with equal protection of the law to all people, regardless of things we can't change that we were born into, such as being male or female, or, you know, having a certain appearance, or, you know, certain racial background.
With about 30 seconds here, you say that research demonstrates that emphasizing our differences actually increases racism. Tell us about that with 30 seconds.
Right. So we're starting to see research come in to talk about these two different characterizations of what equality means. And the short answer is that we are seeing that when people are taught to hate themselves because of their skin color, such as the critical race theory trainings that teach white people that they are inherently evil because of their skin color, that increases racism. Like, anyone with common sense would realize that that would increase racism. But, you know, apparently our elites, you know, who control the country don't have any common sense anymore. So they need research to confirm, you know, what's obvious to anyone with any lick of sense.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book The Education Invasion, and a recent column titled Partitioning Smithsonian Museums by Race is Anti-American and Morally Evil. You can find links to her columns, and you can purchase The Education Invasion on the Talk On Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Joy, thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Adam Francisco is with us on the other side of the break for part 8 of our series, Answering Arguments Against Christianity. Today, the Bible isn't a reliable historical document. Advent is a time to reflect, pray, and worship the Christ who came, who comes, and will come again. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December is an Advent devotional booklet called The Jesse Tree. These short daily devotions are filled with symbols, telling the story of Jesus from creation to his second coming. The Jesse Tree is available for only $3. Learn more at issuesetc.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. The Jesse Tree.
I'm Chaplain Sean Denzer, Director of Worship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Congregations work hard to keep the Word of Christ dwelling richly in his disciples now and into eternal life. We work to help and support that effort. Learn more at lcms.org/worship. You'll find resources on the church year, Bible studies on the hymns of the day, audio helps for learning to sing our services, and look for worship planning resources to find the latest from LCMS worship. That's lcms.org/worship. May the Word of Christ dwell richly in you.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Our Christian faith is under constant attack, and we must be proactive in keeping our children in the church. At Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas, we believe that an education rooted in God's Word is one that stands against the very gates of hell. Nothing in this world is more important. Offering a rigorous classical Lutheran education, we provide in-person and live online remote learning opportunities for preschool through grade 12. To learn more, visit flsplano.org, flsplano.org.
Logia Journal, the Confessional Dogmatic Series. The works of Kurt Marquardt and many other resources are all brought to you by Luther Academy. Did you know that during this time of COVID-19, your purchases and donations help Luther Academy supply these same resources to pastors around the world? please consider helping us with this important need through your prayers and financial support. Learn how you can help by visiting lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com.